Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. My special guest today is Luke Murrell from Australian Bloodstock, and we like to have a chat with him each spring about the big cups and the Cox Plate because in his role with Australian Bloodstock, he spends a lot of time looking at the overseas horses and looking to buy some of those overseas horses and aim them at the big races. So he has a fair bit of knowledge of those and manages to weigh those up against the local form as well. And he's very honest in his opinions, and we really like that. We want to find out where he thinks the value is and where he thinks there might be a false favourite. So let's have a chat with Luke. Thanks for joining us today, Luke.
Yep, no problem at all.
Good to have you on board, and I got in touch last week to tee up a chat about the cups and the Cox Plate, but that was before the win of Salon Soldier on the weekend. It must be hard not to get a little bit excited when you see an import show a turn of foot like that.
Yeah, well, you always had that over in Germany, so you'd like to see them don't get too excited until they can do it here, but I think you sort of got to take into account is a lot of the German horses are a little bit raw, but there's a lot of pitfalls there too. I know a few of the boys from different trainers have bought horses that haven't measured up, so he's fairly exciting, albeit a little bit more exposed than, say, a horse like Lucas Kranich was. So, yeah, he's a very nice horse.
Yeah, what plans do you have for him?
Got a fair opinion of him. I think he can measure up to a Group 1 handicap for sure, and whether he's a weight for age horse, don't know. Some of his form overseas was just terrific, and without looking at a McKinnon, if that's true, a couple of days later on, there's a listed race, and then we might end up in a zipping classic or something like that, just to get lined on him, so we know where to go to in the autumn.
Fair enough, and that continues some success you've had with the German gallopers. I think last time we spoke, you mentioned that there's a little bit of an edge that you find because their times aren't necessarily accurate, and there's a bit of importance in certain areas of the form that you place that maybe others don't. Where do you think you've gone right in a couple of instances? And you mentioned that other people haven't enjoyed the same success. What do you think that boils down to?
I think in Europe doesn't take into account sectional times. I think it's a bit myth. And look, I can speak to some French and German people, and they find it amazing that I think there's such a big difference of, 1 or 1.5 seconds in the times. They seem to think that's irrelevant. So whatever they think, that sort of can perhaps helps me identify different things. And, as 1.5 seconds out in time is a massive thing. And I know there's some French races and even Germans that they just don't even record final time. So I'm pretty lucky. I've got a guy over there that sends me all the raw tapes, and we tape them here, and we come up with our own times, and as I think Vince will attest to, it's not just Germany where their times are wrong, but, those type of things give me a massive advantage, and there's not a lot of footage on German horses, but lucky enough I get to see every single run, and helps you find those horses perhaps before they become exposed. And I was really proud of bought that mare Salamina who won the German Oaks, and we found her out of a maiden and no one had ever heard of her. So it is a big advantage. Look, obviously the UK and the Irish and the French is a little bit more exposed, but I like the German horses, but as you say, we've done it in last year, there's plenty of good horses, doesn't matter where you're from.
Fair enough. And what's the latest with Salamina?
We were lucky enough to sell her after she won the German Oaks, and bought by Yoshida's, and they gave her one run and rode her upside down and then sent her off to stud. So, but I know Mr. Yoshida, he's really keen on buying all these Group 1 fillies and mares off the track. I think he bought Southern Speed, and with a bit of luck, Shani Rose can upset him in the mire and he can buy her again as well.
Yeah, quite a weekend. But yeah, got you on to talk mainly about the cups and the Cox Plate. So who do you like? I'll just let people know we are recording early in the week, but who do you like at this stage for the Caulfield Cup?
Look, I know the media sort of come out and said Hawkspur's over the line, and I probably couldn't disagree a great deal. To me, there's a few holes in his form, but I think the biggest thing is I'm not sure where the speed comes from in this cup. I'm not sure if Gay's running both of hers and horses like Quintessential, but I think it could end up very much like last year's Melbourne Cup run to the crawl, and as a result, you want to be on horses hard up there on the speed and drawn over near the fence, because Like, Hawksford's the favourite, and his information is all his runs this prep, they've been very slowly run, and he's just unleashed this monster turn of foot, which is, you know, he has been the flashing light in every single one of his runs. But if he draws wide and goes back, especially around Caulfield, I'm not so sure. You know, I don't think he's got the ability of a Dunedin or anything. So, yeah, well, look, I think you'll see a Caulfield Cup where, you know, you'll see a first four that'll pay 800 grand. I just think it's a race full of horses that are perhaps a little bit under the radar that maybe won't get found, because there's a couple there in the market I just can't believe they're anywhere near. So very keen to see the barrier draw, I suppose.
You mentioned there's a couple that you can't believe are hard in the market. The standard disclaimer, because normally we run your written or audio interviews and a few connections or other people seem to take offence. Good luck if you...
I don't mean to be offensive at all. It's just my opinion. You've got to be really harsh with your opinion. And I'll be frank, Dino as a 3- and 4-year-old was an absolute weapon. He was one of the most explosive horses you've ever wished to have seen. But the media sort of got on the bandwagon of his last win in America. Well, look, to be honest, I think Senegas would have won that race, and they were just absolute pedestrians that he beat. There wasn't a group winner, I don't think, in the race. They were horses that were placing in minor stakes level group threes, and you know, he didn't donkey lick them. There was nothing flash about the time. He didn't run a sectional. And his first up was a four-horse race. And the run everyone's talking about, well, he was off the bit and looked like he was going to run last. And I think the fact that it didn't go overly hard, he was able to plug on. And for me, Dandino is a really good horse on a rock-hard track. Anything worse and he starts to lose lengths. And I like him much better ridden cold as well, but hasn't been seen to be the method with him with the new trainer and whatnot. But I couldn't really see him figuring on what he's done in the last sort of 12 months. And, you know, I think history sort of says you've got to be a horse in form and going well with the right run. But I think we'll see a race run like where Southern Speed won her cup that year. I don't think she was the best horse in the race, but she just got the right race shape. She got the right draw. Everything just planned out perfectly. And I think we're going to be looking for horses like that this year, as opposed to when Dunedin won, he was just clearly the best horse. The winner really did how he won, where he was drawn, he was just a better horse.
So you've put a line through Dandino. Which other ones that are in the market are you not a big fan of?
Equestrian Royal Descent. Loved Alona and everything. But I think for her to be effective, she's going to want a wet track. I thought she was quite disappointing the other day, and she's really sprinted home. You know, everyone's getting excited because she sprinted home once at Warwick Farm, where they traditionally can rattle off a decent time coming home. So I think she's a real suspect type. Her and Dandino are taking up a large portion of the market that perhaps doesn't justify at this stage on what they've done. Dandino, I'm not sure if he's staying here, but if they work him out and ride him quiet and get him back to his 3- or 4-year-old form, well, he's the one you want, but he's a long, long way off that. Menegar, with the news today that he'll be the top weight, I don't think he's going anywhere near what he was.
In the market, Silent Achiever, Jetaway, Dear Demi.
Jetaway, if it was 2000, you couldn't have enough on Jetaway. He's a Cape Cross, and they traditionally like a bit of give in the ground, but he's been tried once at 2400 on a slow and got lapped. But I thought his run the other day was just outstanding after he's well sort of publicised. He's had a few issues with mucus and that. And I thought he actually had a better record at 2400 than what he has. And I reckon he'll loom as the leader, and everyone will call him the winner at some stage. But I just question him over the last sort of 200. I think he'll really be gasping for breath. But there's sort of not an obvious one that you're going to say, look, if Hawksbury drew poorly, he hasn't shown the gate speed this prep to say he's going to be on speed like he was in Queensland. You could nearly write him off if he has to go back, because I just don't see any tempo on what's likely field anyway. Don't know where it leaves you. You know, Jetaway was good. I'd love to be on him, and I'm still probably going to back him, but you're going to be worried about the last bit. Silent Achiever. If you look at her form, every 2,400-metre run she's running in her life, they've ridden her very quiet. I think that's because they probably suspect that she doesn't quite get it either. But her BMW run puts her in top 3 or 4 here. But again, if she's back with, you know, Hawkspur and the likes, even 12 or 10 lengths, I'm not sure she's going that well to be able to round them up off a no tempo. The ones I thought were possible, there's not many left, you know. Ethiopia is a place chance. I think he's going better than most people give him credit for, but I probably couldn't see him winning. Moran's not good enough off that last run. Seville's not going. Super Cool, I thought you said, what, is Kavanagh going there or he's not?
They're making a decision tomorrow, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
Tomorrow being Tuesday, like I said, we're recording early, so.
Yeah.
Well, like, what we'll do is get your 1, 2, 3 and put it in the newsletter and the blog post, because pre-barrier draw, you're a little bit blinded by not knowing the likely speed map at this stage.
Yeah, well, look, I thought the only possible winning chances were Super Cool if they ride him correctly, and I think he needs to be absolutely highballing and going suicide tempo like they did Australia Cup. All these other runs I think are a bit standard. I think My Horse is a massive chance. I think everyone has forgotten about him. His last two-thirds of his race 2 starts ago was better than Happy Trails. Poussin Saloon was a length better and Green Moon was half a length better, and they'd be hard in the market here.
Wald Park you're talking about?
That's Wald Park, yeah. He's had 6 goes at 2,200 or more, 2 wins, 3 seconds and a fourth, and 5 of the 6 have all been at Group 1 level. And his last 2,400-metre run was, when you watch the tape, you swear he beat Novelist. So I think he'll run top 5, no problem. I think he's going well enough to do that. But then the only other chance is a Jetaway, Silent Achiever, Hawkspur. So I think it's quite a thin race, and I think you'll see a lot of horses that you thought weren't going as good really pop up in this one.
Okay, so we'll move on to the Melbourne Cup, and similar market in that Hawkspur is right up the top, but then you've also got Fiorente and Poussin Saloon, Mount Athos. What are your thoughts on, again, it's a fair way off, but from a betting perspective, who do you like, who don't you like at this stage?
I think a lot of the Europeans that are coming here that aren't Australian owned at this stage, there's probably only 1 or 2 chances that could win the race. You know, some of these, well, even in the Caulfield Cup, I think there's a horse called Forgotten Voice or something. The horse's last start where it won, the trainer wants to retire the horse. You know, I think that gives you a pretty good indication that it's not going as good as or it should be here. Brown Panther, I think, will get lapped in the Melbourne Cup. There's a horse from France called Varima. I think if people like to crunch and to be on the likely winner, I think it's probably a clear horse to beat at this stage. I think it was $17 or $19. It is the only provider. She's a filly and you've got to travel them around the world. But if she gets here, even travel 75% right, I think she just wins. She's just got the most relaxed action. Nothing seems to bother her. Heavy tracks or fast tracks. She's rattled off some unbelievable sectionals, and I'd have her now at $5. I think she's nearly over the line, as long as she travels well. The Irish horse has got a lot of publicity. I think he's okay, but I think the standard that he's raced to date, everyone will say, oh, he beat Red Cadet. Well, Red Cadet probably hasn't gone well for, 6 or 12 months. There's probably not a lot of substance to that horse. I know Dermot Weld was obviously quoted as saying he didn't think she was anywhere near ready and would have preferred to come next year. Mr. Mully's a horse that I think could do something. I just don't think he's going to get the right race in the Caulfield Cup. In the Melbourne Cup, he can rattle off a sprinter-like sectional, so he's got to be a chance. But again, you sort of, I couldn't have the Moroney horse. Maybe next year, and she's a filly, but the Varima, the thing Gabe bought, Trey Blur, it's got some really, really strong form, and I think it's got 51 in the Melbourne Cup, if I'm right. And if it got here sound and travelled well, it'd be a top 4 chance. But as far as, some of your favourites there, they're probably looking just to pick up a bit of money, the bookmakers, because I couldn't see them finishing anywhere near it. Poussin Saloon, 1,000,000 to 1 are running the trip, and it's clearly not going good enough with, Boss wanting to get off and ride the Irish horse, so. Yeah, I think the winner, if it doesn't come out sort of Varima and Trey Blue, is already here. What it is, I suppose the Caulfield Cup will tell you a little bit, but then again, I just don't think it'll be. Last year's Melbourne Cup was running very unusual, slow tempo, and I can't see that happening 2 years in a row. There'll be a lot of lightweight chances in this year's Cup, and I think it'll be run a lot more truly, and for that reason, I think you've got to, even though he's flying, I think you've got to risk Fiorente. We know he can sprint off a no tempo, but the 3,200 for him, I'd question him on a really genuine, normal Melbourne Cup type run. Yeah, so that's probably it for the Melbourne Cup. But and look, personally, I think if it's a done deal, it's 80 or 90% right. Well, it'll just win the Cox Plate by as far as it wants. And
yeah, I'd like to talk to you about the Cox Plate. I know probably August, September last year, you couldn't believe the odds about Atlantic Jewel a fairway out in the Cox Plate, and yeah, she did go amiss. We're less than a fortnight away right now, but she's, you know, close to 6-4 favourite. Doesn't sound like you think that she deserves to be that quote.
No, I don't. Look, I'd be a lot more excited if we had some natural leaders in the Cox Plate. If you go through the top 10 or so in betting, I can't really find one that wants to roll. You know, if you could get a Regal Roller type horse that can just go along at an even tempo, even a Spacecraft, he didn't go along on the weekend. I think something's happened to him there, but I think she's a 1,000,000 to 1 and drifting of winning the race if it was run at a typical Cox Plate where they take off, you know, 1,000 out. I haven't, you know, yeah, she was impressive to the eye on the weekend, but everything that I do says that she's a massive, massive risk, and I'll be laying her for the place if the race looks like there's even tempo in the race.
And so when you say everything you do?
Yeah, everything that I do just says she's a massive distance doubt and really not much chance, as long as they run it at a genuine tempo.
I was about to say, and you work pretty closely with Vince's data or similar stuff, and obviously the videos as well. Is it a combination of both that makes you think she won't get a strong, high-pressure 2,000 metres?
Yeah, Vince's stuff is excellent. I you know, live or die by my own stuff that I do, and use Vince's as there's probably not a better judge out than Vince, so I know he's still got a question mark on her, but she just, unfortunately, all the weight for age races this year have been a real dawdle and then sprint home the last 400, and look, she's just outstanding when she gets that type of event to happen. And again, they went slow on the weekends, and all we saw was that she could sprint 400 metres. Well, if Dundee's got anywhere near his autumn form or his form prior to that, he will just blow her away and she won't get close to him. So, and for that reason, you know, I think Fiorente, if he has to take off 600 or 800, he's got a better turn of foot, and, you know, she's going to go around $1.10 or $1.15 to play. You could make some serious money laying her there to place because she's got so much public support.
Any similarities to a more joyous then? It was maybe not quite as short, but got gassed a couple hundred out.
Yeah, well, I'd back more joyous over her at 2,000. So if you just get that standard, it's an even run Cox Plate, I think she's in a fair bit of trouble. But I can't believe anyone would want to back her now, or even at race day at $2, or you'd want a lot longer than that if you're serious with your money, you know, if you respect it. So Dundee, obviously, it's not ideal, but I reckon he could have run top five in the arc. So he's a world-class horse, and they're just going to get him there pretty fit, and he'll be right, I think.
Just finish up then. What track condition do you think would suit? Well, I mean, it sounds like you don't like her in the race anyway, but what would be the most advantageous track for Atlantic Jewel? Is it one with a little bit of give, or... Because just as we're talking now, the rain's coming down. But, you know, if it's a slow track again, do you think she's even more of a risk?
Yeah, I suppose. Like, in theory, if the ground's heavier, it means you've sort of, you've got to run harder to get through it. And I think that's where her issue is with the stamina. But unfortunately, I just can't seem to find anything that wants to really lead in that race. Like, we haven't got a Fessio or one of those tough horses that can go along and go at even tempo and try and hang on. And it might just end up that she's very lucky and she gets the perfect year to try and that she can win the Cox Plate. But I think 90 times out of 100, she won't get that type of race shape where she will be a realistic chance on everything that she's done, even when she won at 2,000 against the 3-year-old fillies and all that jazz. Well, there's no doubt at sort of 14 and a mile, she's probably top 3 or 4 in the world, but it's a different kettle of fish when you get to sort of when you're taken off and asking to sprint from 1,000 out or 800 out. She's never done it, and, you know, it's a very short price to take to say that she will do it.
Excellent. All right, interesting stuff and thought-provoking and opinionated, which is what we wanted. There's no point coming on here and, you know, telling me, like, the fave from the second fave from the third fave, so really appreciate your honesty, and all the best for your horses for the spring, and all the best to everyone that listened in and follow your recommendations.
Yeah, beautiful. No problem.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.